You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Here's something you may not know about me, because when would this come up on my sex and relationship advice podcast? And it's not really something I bring up at random, because boy, does it date me. Anyway, I was living in West Berlin when the Berlin Wall fell in November of 1989. I was very young. It was an amazing time to be alive and to be alive in Berlin, way back when America stood for tearing down walls, not erecting them. And a few weeks later, after reading about the street protests in Czechoslovakia, I got on a train to Prague with my then boyfriend. And we were there when the communist totalitarian government of Czechoslovakia fell. An amazing time to be alive and to be in Wenceslas Square. And a few weeks after that, we decided to go to Romania, which still had a brutal Stalinist dictator. And we were going to go there for Christmas. But at the last moment, we decided that it was just too fucking cold. We'd been freezing our asses off in Berlin and in the streets of Prague, and we needed a break. Too cold. Too cold to be in Bucharest at Christmas, where there wasn't much food or heat. So we weren't in Romania when the Stalinist government fell over Christmas in 1989. And that may have been a good thing. Unlike the fall of the Berlin Wall, unlike the Velvet Revolution, where no shots were fired and no blood was spilled, shots were fired and people died in Bucharest, and tourists were rounded up by the secret police and loaded onto cattle cars and shipped out of the country because the dictator of Romania didn't want any foreign witnesses for the bloodbath he was planning. This isn't a random trip down memory lane. I promise Danpa is not having a stroke. I was thinking about Romania and its Stalinist dictator, Nicolae Ceaușescu, this morning because of Ohio and Georgia and Missouri and, in particular, Alabama. Basically all the states where Republicans, Republican men and Republican women, are attempting to outlaw abortion. Because one of the things the world learned about Ceaușescu's Romania after the fall of Ceaușescu's dictatorship is what happens to a society not just after freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, religious freedom, and all other freedoms are suppressed or obliterated, but what happens to a society after a woman's freedom to control her own body is obliterated. Ceaușescu banned abortion and contraception in 1966 to grow Romania. Banning abortion and making it harder for women to access contraception, in part by defining many forms of contraception as abortion, Ceaușescu's Romania, 50 years ago, Trump's GOP today. I was reading Foreign Policy magazine. Yes, I don't just read sex journals and watch very disappointing Game of Thrones season finales. Sometimes I read Foreign Policy magazine. They call Romania under Ceaușescu a real-life test case of what happens when a country outlaws abortion entirely. And the results, Foreign Policy states, were devastating. More than 10,000 Romanian women are known to have died as a result of botched or self-administered abortions, but the real number is believed to be much, much higher, since people were afraid to report the real reason a woman showed up at a hospital bleeding from internal injuries. If she survived, she could go to prison, and so could anyone who helped her and her family. Maternal mortality skyrocketed. Violence against women, because they were so vulnerable, skyrocketed in Romania. And by 1989, 200,000 unwanted children were being housed in appalling Romanian orphanages where they were starved, neglected, and sexually abused. That's what happens when a country outlaws abortion entirely. Women die. It seems we've forgotten the lessons of Ceaușescu's Romania. How else to explain that Alabama's proposed abortion ban is worse, more restrictive, more severe than even Ceaușescu's abortion ban? Romania, under Ceaușescu, its Stalinist dictator, allowed a woman to get an abortion in the case of rape or incest or serious genetic deformity. The law passed in Alabama does not allow for an exception in any of those cases. Of course, the wealthy in Romania, the communist elite, they could still get abortions. They also had access to contraception, smuggled in from the West. So it was the poor who suffered. The same will happen here. The same will happen in Alabama if Republicans succeed in overturning Roe and banning abortion. The wealthy, the well-off, the mostly white, will be able to travel to states where abortion is legal, while women in Alabama who have miscarriages will have their bodies treated like crime scenes. just like the bodies of women in Romania were. I'm old enough to remember when Republicans used to hate communism. They opposed the state seizing control of the means of production. But when it comes to the state seizing control of the means of reproduction, yeah, they're all a bunch of fucking Stalinists. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long and no ads, actress Maddie Corman, star of Accidentally Brave, joins me for a conversation about what happens or what happened to her, what she experienced when her husband was arrested for possessing child pornography. All that coming up on today's show. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. For a free online visit and free two-day shipping, go to getroman.com/savage. Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to meundies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. This is a 38-year-old male from the Midwest. I have been married for 8 years and have one daughter, and I'm getting a divorce. I am now accepting my life as a gay man, and I'm going to live that way. I've known since I was probably 14, living in the Midwest, religion, and so forth. I have did not accept it always, but now I am. I met a guy. We've known each other for about 5 months. I am crazy about him. He is very nice to me. We have a good time together. We enjoy each other's company. However, he travels a lot. He is out of the state, and soon he'll be moving to Canada, and he's not likely to come back to the Midwest because of his work. I have expressed to him that I would gladly join him, but at some point, but yes, I have to work through this marriage piece, and for him, that seems a little bit complicated. So he has a hard time seeing our future together because he has a hard time understanding what's happening in the present. Also, because of that, when we get together, we have a lot of deep conversations, which he doesn't always enjoy. And he sees me as someone who has these deep conversations. It's not totally his personality. And so again, he has a hard time with our future. Question is, how do I pursue this relationship? Totally crazy about him. And I want it to work, but I just need to know how to make it work.
You say you want it to work. You ask, how do I make this work? And I want to ask you to define work. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by this relationship working out for you? Usually what people mean is the relationship is forever, until death do you part. That's what people mean by the relationship worked out. It's a little weird that we define success for relationships so narrowly. Relationships are the only thing that if two people get out of it alive, we consider it a failure. We don't think that way about tandem bicycles, cars, airplanes, dinner reservations, anything else. But with relationships, it only worked out if you're together for, well, not forever, because no one is immortal, together until one of you was at the funeral home signing the papers to have the other of you embalmed. And then it was a success. That relationship worked out. Well, a relationship can end. It can end at 5 months. It can end at 10 years. It can end at 20 years and have been a success. A relationship can end and it can still work out. If what you come away with from that relationship is maybe a friendship, maybe a lifelong contact, maybe occasional fuck buddy, and having learned something about yourself, having grown emotionally, sexually, socially, You're a 38-year-old man. You just came out of the closet. You are finally living your truth. And when you come out, it's almost as if your emotional clock gets set to 15 again, however old you are. If you come out at 15, you're 15 years old. If you come out at 25 and you're having your first relationship where you are capable of falling in love with someone romantically and you're attracted to them sexually, it's as if you're 15. Come out at 35, it's as if you're 15. And those relationships, when you're 15, new love, first love, actual love, romantic and sexual love, those are very intensely felt. And we invest in them. And we can be devastated when they end. No one's heart breaks like the 15-year-old's heart breaks, however old that 15-year-old might be. So you need to try to keep this relationship in perspective. Where you are right now, how intensely you're feeling things, how long you waited to have this kind of connection with a man. You may be investing too much in this relationship. You may be heaping more up on it than it can bear. And so I would encourage you to loosen your grip and to reason with yourself, the 38-year-old man that you are, to reason with the 15-year-old just out gay kid deep inside you. And to tell yourself, this could work out. This could be a successful relationship, even if it doesn't last forever. Even if it ends when he moves away to Canada. Even if circumstance is what pulls us apart and not a desire to stop seeing each other. Because you have the divorce and you also have this child. Not just the marriage piece that you have to resolve. It's the child parenting. And that's not something you're ever going to resolve. You're going to have to be present in your child's life. That may keep you where you are, at least for another decade and change. It may ultimately be in your long-term best interests to be single and divorcing and single and co-parenting and dating locally and remembering this man and everything he did for you and to you fondly. And maybe getting together when you can, maybe seeing if the LDR thing might work out, and also reminding yourself that the intensity of your feelings right now for this man, it may be about who this man is. It's likelier to be about the man you are and the place you are in your life right now. So take a deep breath and tell yourself, if you're together with this guy in 5 years, worked out. If you're with somebody else 5 years from now, and this guy is a friend, and if not a friend, not a presence in your life, someone you remember fondly and are grateful for having had in your life, then that relationship worked out too.
Hi, Dan. I'm dating a guy now, and he is an addict, and he used to be a sex addict, and he's dated multiple people, like hundreds of people. And now we have a very healthy relationship, and things are different. He does self-work, and our relationship is definitely different, but these girls are like creeping into from the past or like coming back into our lives, like messaging him on Instagram and text and reaching out and wanting to talk and saying really inappropriate stuff, telling him he can't have a good relationship. And these messages mean nothing to him, but they mean a lot to me. So I'm having a hard time handling it, and I would like your advice with this.
If they mean nothing to him, these messages, maybe he should get a new fucking phone number so all of these women who are creeping out of the past and direct messaging him because they want the D don't have his current phone number anymore and can't find him. Of course, then they could always DM him on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all the other ways in which we make ourselves vulnerable to the people from our pasts. Look, you are in love with a guy who says he was a sex addict. I don't think sex addiction is a thing. Some people have a lot of sex. Some people have a lot of sex partners. We live in a sex negative culture, and often we apply that sex addict label to anyone who's having more sex than we are. And while it's true that some people will abuse sex, that doesn't come from a place of chemical addiction. They're not physically addicted to sex. They are just seeking sex and maybe seeking it for the wrong reasons. But sometimes people have a lot of sex, have a lot of sex partners for the right reasons. They have a really high libido and they enjoy variety. But we pathologize that because the culture and our religions and our families are much more comfortable if we have sex with one person and one person at a time, and preferably one person only and forever. And that's not the way most people's sexualities actually work. And the pressure of having to fit into that mold, one person one person at a time, preferably one person forever. That can cause people to really, you know, burst at the seams a little bit and act out sexually and seek more sex and have more sex partners than logistically or health-wise or reasonably that they can handle. And it isn't about a sex addiction. It's about the pressure to conform and then pushing back against that in perhaps an unhealthy way. Anyway, I'm deep in the sex addict tangent. What do you do about these messages? He changes his phone number. He blocks people he doesn't want to hear from anymore. And you have to regard his past as a price of admission you're willing to pay to be with him, rolling with his past, handling his past. Your partner had many, many, many sex partners, and he made himself available to them on a moment's notice. And it's going to take time for all of these people who are used to sending him a message and then 20 minutes later having his D to get it through their heads that he ain't playing like that anymore. So these will drop off over time. But in the short run, you're just going to have to put up with it. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable ignoring it than they are seeing a doctor. I am certainly guilty of that myself. And pretty much the same goes, or it's even worse, when guys have to talk to their doctors about erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Here at the Lovecast, we take ED very seriously. There is no reason to ignore it. And thankfully, Roman has created an easy way to chat with a doctor online if that's how you need to do it. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient and discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Go to GetRoman.com/savage and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. And with Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor. Just go to GetRoman.com/savage to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/savage for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. This is a 24-year-old bi woman calling from the West Coast, but none of that really matters because everybody poops. So, bit of a situation today with my boyfriend of 6 years. We live together, and he got to the bathroom first this morning, which is pretty typical. Takes his time on the toilet, and he's on his phone, takes a little longer, and he has this whole routine that he likes to go through while I am waiting in bed because I have never had to poop so bad in my entire life. So last night we had this huge pasta dinner, and then I had dreams about like pooping myself in front of people. Like I literally just shit so bad all night. And so I texted him from bed to be sweet and say, "Hey, I got to poop. Are you almost done?" And he was like, "Yeah, I'm working on it, whatever." A couple minutes go by. I get up and go into the bathroom because he's now just kind of doing his hair. And I started to be a little bit naggy because I've literally never had to shit this bad in my life. So he doesn't like the nagginess. I asked him to please just kind of get his stuff out because I wanted privacy to do this. And if maybe he could just do his hair in a different room because there's nowhere else that I can shit. So he slowly starts doing that. And I'm getting a little bit frantic at this point. Like it's about to happen. Didn't really feel like pooping in front of someone today. And he blew up at me and said that all I do is nag and I can't nag to get what I want. I'm not the center of the universe. And like he was leaving, blah, blah, blah. So my question is, I understand it's not cool to nag, but is nagging permissible when you're literally going to shit yourself?
It was an emergency. You were going to shit your pants or shit on the floor or shit in front of him, and you didn't want to do that. And you communicated to him the urgency of the moment. And what you got back from him was, "You nag at me all the time." That could be true. I haven't seen the Big Brother style unedited feed from your apartment, so I couldn't say how it is that you treat him when you don't have to shit your pants, when it isn't an emergency. It is possible that you do nag him all the time and that he couldn't distinguish the urgency of this moment from any other moment, because you use the same tone or perhaps you use the same language when you're communicating to him about everything else. That said, if I had to issue a ruling, who was the jerk in this moment? Who was the asshole at that moment in that bathroom? Him. He was totally the asshole. That was totally a jerk-ass move. And he should have gotten the fuck out of the bathroom. When two people are sharing a living space and there's only one toilet and somebody's got to take a crap and they can't hold it, you got to get the fuck out. So I think you should have a conversation with him. Use your words. You should talk to him and say, look, that was a total asshole move on your part. It was an emergency. I had to shit. I was going to shit my pants or shit on the floor. And I had to make that clear to you in the moment. It wasn't a case where I could just pinch it off and give you your time. I had to get you out of the toilet. It wasn't a case where I could just pinch it off and give you your time. So I think you owe me an apology for how you reacted in that moment. And once I have that apology, we can have a conversation about the nagging. You suggested that it wasn't just this moment in the bathroom where I was kind of insistent and imploring, perhaps with a tone in my voice. You stated that I do this all the time. And if that's true, maybe that's something that we need to talk about. Maybe that's something I was unaware of and you have now made me conscious of, and we can work on that together. So if I'm communicating with you about finding your jacket so we can get to the movie, or socks on the floor, or something else in the same urgent, emergency tones, yeah, that's a problem, because then when it's an actual emergency, you won't be able to tell the difference. And this was a case where it was an actual emergency and you're suggesting to me you couldn't tell the difference, so let's talk about that. On a scale from 1 to 10, how would you rate your underpants? If you didn't say 1 billion, then you are not wearing me undies. Me Undies uses the coveted micromodal fabric, which is a full 3 times softer than cotton. And cotton is already pretty darn soft. Me Undies, they take comfort to an extreme sport level. Me Undies also offers multiple style options for both men and women. Men can now try the new boxer brief with fly, which is the same great cut as boxer brief, but now with the added option for guys who prefer to go through the gate, not over the fence. MeUndies is also your go-to for the softest loungewear on the planet. Like me, you can hang out in their super comfy lounge pants, or you can try their onesies. Yes, MeUndies makes onesies for all over softness. They are incredible. Nancy and her daughters love MeUndies onesies. Me and my husband love the MeUndies lounge pants, and I predict that you will love your MeUndies too. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you make your MeUndies order, your first one, you get 15% off and free shipping. Get 15% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you will ever pull on and off. To get your 15% off your first pair, free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee, and to support the Lovecast, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I was having PIV intercourse with a male lover of mine when the condom slipped off and was lodged inside of me. Happens all the time, not a problem. The dude said, oh, condom came off. Okay, all right. I assumed he pulled it out because he continued to have intercourse with me, put on another condom, continued to fuck me, wrapped up the evening and left the house. 4 days later, I'm in the bathroom going pee and out pops a condom. I was utterly pissed. How in God's creation could somebody leave a piece of plastic inside of me and not let me know? And to further exacerbate the situation, the 4 days that passed between the PIV intercourse and the moment in which the condom popped out, I had terrible inflammation, itchiness. I had to call my doctor. I had to get medicine prescribed to me. It was incredibly uncomfortable. I had to go to the Kaiser. You know how difficult that is. So it was a real pain in my not ass, but the other hole. When I confronted him through text, very politely, I mentioned, oh, hey, fellow, guess what? I had a pretty interesting situation, kind of gross. Condom popped out. And, you know, in the future, could you maybe explicitly let me know that you did not take the condom out? Or maybe I should explicitly ask you, have you taken the condom out? His response was glib, and he kind of washed it away. When a few weeks later, he was probing around for more sex and I was not interested to have sex with him anymore, he responded that I was being harsh. And I don't think that's true. I don't think I'm being harsh. So there was alcohol and marijuana involved, and he attributed his lack of follow through to his inebriation. But I don't think that's a good enough excuse. So please help me out. Who is responsible to get the condom out of the body? The person wearing the condom, or the person who can't even feel it inside them and only heard you mention that the condom came off? Whose responsibility? I didn't even know I was supposed to dig in there and get it out. I sure would have had I known it was still in there.
Really? You need me to tell you that you're in the right here and he's in the wrong? Okay, I'll do that. You're absolutely 100,000% in the right. He is utterly 100,000 billion negative percent in the wrong. I'm a little disturbed, though. I want to jump back to what you said at the top of the call. The condom slipped off. He said it slipped off, and you were like, hey, that's no big deal. Happens all the time, not a problem. That's a problem when the condom slips off. That is a thing that can happen. Condoms do sometimes slip off. They do sometimes break. Condoms have failure rates. If it's happening all the time, somebody's doing something wrong. And since you're the common denominator there in all these times where this has happened, maybe it's you, or maybe you're pulling the short straws and you're getting a lot of inept guys. I would direct you, though, to Planned Parenthood's website, where you can read a long post about the proper and correct usage of condoms. Used correctly, condoms have a 98% effective rate. They're 98% effective at preventing pregnancy. But in reality, they're only roughly 85% effective because people don't always use them properly. They're using condoms that are the wrong size. They're not putting them on correctly. So since you were intimately involved when that condom is applied, I would direct you to Planned Parenthood's website so that you can monitor the guy as he's putting the condom on to make sure he's doing it right. And as someone who's getting fucked a lot by guys wearing condoms, the height of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, my pro tip from me to everybody else out there who's getting fucked by somebody wearing a condom, check for it every once in a while. That doesn't mean you have to stop and jump off and turn on a flashlight. That can just mean let your hand drift down and feel the dick and make sure you can still feel that condom there, or do a sight check and make sure that condom's there. It was a life and death thing. The stakes were life and death in 1988, 1990, 1992, 93, 94, 95. And so it was a huge problem if a condom broke or slipped off. It's a problem still, though, for you. Unplanned pregnancy, sexually transmitted infections. It is a problem. And if it's happening all the time, you're going to want to address that. But yeah, this guy who stopped and said the condom slipped off and then applied, was too drunk, he says, too high to retrieve the condom, to let you know the condom was still up in there, but not too drunk or high to put on another condom, not too drunk or high to lose his erection, put on another condom and then fucked the loose condom further up into your twat? Yeah, fuck him. He's an asshole and an idiot, and he's no one you should ever let within 100 yards of your pussy ever again. That is not too harsh. That's justice. No one really has time to go to the post office. You're busy. Who's got time for all the traffic, parking, lugging all your mail and packages? It's a real hassle. That's why you need Stamps.com, one of the most popular time-saving tools for small businesses. Stamps.com eliminates trips to the post office and saves you money with discounts you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Post Office right to your computer. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. Once your mail is ready, just hand it to your mail carrier or drop it in a mailbox. It's that simple. With Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. Not to mention, it's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, saves you time and money. It's no wonder over 700,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, my listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's stamps.com, click the mic, enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 30-year-old gay man living in a large Midwest city. For the last year and a half, I've been hooking up with a 25-year-old gay male every couple months. We've had great chemistry, and I've been crushing on this guy pretty hard since the beginning. I've been interested in something more. Recently, we started to spend more time outside of the bedroom. We've gone out to dinner. He's introduced me to his friends, and he started to open up to me. He recently told me that since he was 17, he's been a part-time escort. He has a couple regular clients he meets up with, and will also meet up with guys from Grindr and Growler. And the last month, he told me he's been with 5 different guys. He told me it's easy money, and the guys he meets up with are guys he would have had sex with, even if they didn't pay him. He also told me that I'm the first person he's ever told. None of his friends or family members know. I'm really confused by this situation. I really like this guy, but him being an escort may be a deal breaker. I'm a believer that sex work should be legal, and there's nothing wrong with what he's doing, but honestly, a part of me is looking down on him for being an escort. I think a part of me wants to, quote-unquote, fix him. I don't want to think like that, but it's in the back of my mind. My other major concern is STIs. Majority of the time, he's not using a condom with his clients because guys will pay more. He regularly gets tested, and I've been talking to him about using protection, but I'm concerned about his health and mine. Dan, I guess my question is, what do I do? Am I overreacting? Am I overanalyzing? Should I just see where things go? I don't want the first guy he tells about his sex work to reject him because of it. I need some objective advice. I know my judgment is being clouded with the fact that he's a really sweet, nice guy that I really like, on top of us having the best sex of my life.
It's not necessarily about the sex work. It's about the unprotected sex, which puts you at risk of all the other STIs out there, assuming he's on PrEP. I hope he's on PrEP. If he's not on PrEP, you should blow up at him about getting on PrEP if he's having unprotected sex with clients. You're his partner and you're his regular sex partner and he's having unprotected sex with 5 or so different men roughly a month. That puts you at risk. Whether those men are paying him or not, that puts you at risk. And it's a risk that, credit to him, he's informed you, so you can now make an informed choice as you get more involved with him about whether you want to continue in this relationship or have unprotected sex with him yourself in the context of your relationship. So kudos to him, but that may not be a risk you're comfortable with. And if he were a hot, single, 25-year-old gay man in New York City or Chicago or San Francisco or Portland or Seattle or Dallas or Atlanta or New Orleans, he would probably be having roughly 5 sex partners a month because it's easy for hot 25-year-old gay men with access to the internet to have that many sex partners. It was easy for hot 25-year-old gay men to have that many sex partners a month before the internet and Growler and Scruff and Grindr came along. So separate these two issues. The fact that he's being compensated for having sex with people that he wants to have sex with is separate from the risks he's running with the people he's having sex with. Don't shame him for the sex work that he's doing. Praise him for his honesty and communicate to him your boundaries, your concerns, your limits. You have a right to take your own health and safety into account when you're deciding whether or not you want to pursue this relationship any further. And even if you don't feel comfortable having sex with him in the future, you can still be his friend. So long as you're clear with him that this isn't about shaming him for doing sex work, and this isn't about penalizing him for having the decency to be honest with you about the other people he's sleeping with, if he walks away from that conversation and wants to pin it on the sex work and not the fact that it's unprotected sex that he's having with others, compensated or not, you can't control that, and that's on him.
Hi, Dan. 30-year-old straight male here. I recently went through a really rough breakup and got my heart broken pretty bad. In an effort to stay sane and an attempt to heal, I've been doing a lot of hot yoga and Pilates, mainly to focus on being mindful, healthy, and staying fit. My strategy for dealing with heartbreak is to work to get hotter and fitter and focus on making myself a better and more confident person in general. I'm experienced at yoga, so being a member at a yoga studio isn't a new experience for me. I will quickly note that I will never be the dude who joins a yoga studio to try and meet women. I take my practice seriously, gotten me into really good shape, and it's essential for me in maintaining my mental health as well as my physical fitness. I will say, though, that I'm a pretty good-looking dude, I'm in great shape, and I've never really had trouble in that department. So as I begin to feel a little bit more like myself these days and maybe start to think about dating again, it's hard to ignore the fact that the studio I go to is fucking full of insanely hot women. The ratio of men to women is kind of ridiculous. I'll often be the only dude in a studio class full of like 30 women in sports bras and yoga pants. It's hot yoga, so we generally practice in very little clothing. I usually wear a small pair of athletic shorts and go shirtless. I sweat a ton. The energy flying around the studio during a class can be really intense. Hot, exciting, sweaty, flirtatious, sensual, even sometimes sexual. Anyway, I'm wondering if you might pose my question to your female listeners. Is there a tasteful or appropriate way to approach someone who I see regularly but never speak to at my yoga studio? As women, do you tend to enjoy the eye candy in a hot yoga class the same way guys do? The energy and vibe. Kind of sexy, right? Or am I making that up in my head in a typically male way? I understand that a yoga studio is kind of a sacred space, and I want to respect that it's probably a place where women in particular come to get away from all the other bullshit of men hitting on them all the time out in the world. So I barely talk to anyone there because I don't really want to bother anybody. I'm wondering if there's a middle ground and just what the female perspective is on this.
Happy to pump this one to all my female listeners out there who do yoga. Is there a way for a man in your class to respectfully approach you that you would welcome? Are you trying not to think about it? Or are you tapping into those sexy vibes too? What do you say, female yoga practitioners? I will say, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, yeah, there is a way to approach someone from your yoga class later, somewhere else. Get out of the house, go places. If you see someone from your yoga class, you have the perfect opportunity to initiate a conversation at a time that they are not half-dressed or sweaty or zonked out of it from all the hot yoga they just did or changing. And you go up to them in the bar, you go up to them in the restaurant and say, hey, I think we're in a yoga class together. And you establish a rapport. You're telegraphing at that moment that this isn't something you would do at yoga class. So you're letting them know that you are not a jerk, but you're also letting them know that you're a human being out there in the world and you might be interested in getting to know them better. If yoga class is something you have in common with someone and you run into them somewhere that ain't yoga class, strike up a conversation and let her lead. If she shuts you down, go the fuck away. If she opens up to you and engages, keep engaging, keep opening up, and then say hey to her the next time you see her at yoga, and maybe you'll get to the point of swapping phone numbers and hanging out sometime. And while I don't do yoga myself, from my own personal experience as a regular gym goer, there's a big difference between the guy who walks up to you in the locker room and tries to strike up a conversation, or even in the gym and tries to strike up a conversation, and the guy you run into in a coffee shop or a bar who says, hey, I think we go to the same gym. The former, not so into those guys. The latter, fucked each and every one of them.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 27-year-old female, heterosexual, from the southern United States, and I've been dating this man for just shy of a year. I moved in with him about 6-7 months in, and things were going great. I really thought that this, I mean, he could be the one, and a couple weeks ago, he told me, after having sex with me for the past 8 months, almost every day, that now, because he's going to church, he has decided that premarital sex is wrong, and he does not believe that we should be having any kind or any form of sex until we get married. And I respect his boundaries, of course, but I'm shocked that he did not run this by me. He just decided that that's what our relationship was going to be from here on out. So admittedly, I was furious, you know, I was very upset. So the other day I sat him down and we talked it out, and I asked, you know, is there any way that we could think about this before we decide to have a celibate relationship, especially considering that I have moved in with him. We have merged, you know, our finances. We are cohabitating, and essentially, you know, for all intents and purposes of the Christian belief system, we're living in sin. And I asked him, how can we sleep in bed every night and not have sex? I wish you had decided this before we chose to live together. Living with a man in a sexless relationship is not something that I signed up for, and I'm not sure where this came from. We're both religious, but not fanatically religious. He is not willing to work things out with me. He has just told me he will be celibate from here on out. So I'm completely lost.
Unmerge your finances. Move the fuck out. He doesn't get to unilaterally determine the form and shape of your relationship. He needs your consent to remain in this relationship. And he kind of boxed you in or stopped boxing you in under false pretenses. And you are free to go and learn the lesson from this relationship. Moving in together under a year, I can see that. I can get behind that. Merged finances in a year or less. No, that makes you vulnerable, makes anyone vulnerable to this kind of unilateral move by someone that you actually don't know that well. You know pretty well, you're pretty sure of them at a year, but you don't know in that transparent 360-degree way yet. And they can make this unilateral move because you're vulnerable, because now it's harder to walk away. And so you're less likely to bolt, more likely to want to hang around and work on it or think about compounding the error you've already made by marrying this piece of shit so you can start getting fucked again. You can start getting fucked again by someone else. Actually, you don't even have to wait until you move out. You can start getting fucked again by somebody else tonight. But unmerge your finances right fucking now. Start looking for an apartment or a room in somebody else's house or apartment and get the fuck away from this guy. He isn't who you thought he was, and he isn't who he led you to believe he was. And you made a commitment to the guy you thought he was. He ain't that guy. You are released from this commitment.
Hi, Dan. I'm a white male from Canada. I'm a bisexual, or identify as bisexual, and I have a history of sleeping with both men and women and being romantically involved with both men and women. Over the last couple of years, you know, I met a woman who I fell wildly in love with, and I've since married. She has several friends who are members of the LGBT community, predominantly lesbian women and gay men. And periodically they raise, you know, anti-bisexual sentiments in casual conversation or when we're talking about politics or sex or sexuality. And I feel really uncomfortable about this. A, because it feels like it's impinging upon my own identity and my own sexual history, but also because I'm not sure how I can push back. They've only ever known me as like a heterosexual person because I've only ever been in this heterosexual relationship when I've been around them. So it feels really uncomfortable for me as this perceived heterosexual to push back and say that they're mischaracterizing my identity and mischaracterizing the B in the LGBT community because they're out loud and proud lesbian, gay men and women. And I feel like I don't have to face the same oppressions every day that they do because I am in this heterosexual relationship, or at least perceived to be heterosexual relationship. And I'm really struggling to juggle kind of my identity and sort of this anti-bisexual bias that I see cropping up periodically. How should I navigate this?
So your wife's gay and lesbian friends, they're out loud and proud and misinformed, and you're sitting there closeted and quiet and complicit in your own abuse. Yes, they are assuming you're straight because you're in an opposite sex relationship. That is an assumption that people shouldn't make, but that is an assumption that most people will make because it's going to be correct 90%+ of the time. So it falls into the category of reasonable, if not 100% accurate assumptions. And when people make those sorts of assumptions about us that are reasonable and not malicious, it's on us to speak the fuck up. Dude, you say you identify as bisexual, but nobody knows. Or your friends, your wife's friends, these people, your intimates, they don't know how you identify. And maybe you don't feel safe coming out to them, but you know what? The world would not have changed for any sexual minorities if we didn't start coming out to people that it didn't feel safe to come out to. And the stakes of coming out when you're talking about your wife's dumbass gay and lesbian friends are pretty fucking low. They can't throw you out of the house. They can't throw you out of the church. They can't deny you access to anything. You're just going to have to face down an awkward moment where they realize they've been saying stupid, ignorant, ill-informed things in front of you on the assumption that you're straight and you agree with them. And by sitting there silently, you're kind of reinforcing their bigoted attitudes. And by sitting there silently, you are complicit in your own oppression and the continued oppression of other bisexual people by even other sexual minorities. Speak the fuck up already. Your wife's not going to divorce you if you come out as bi because she knows you're bi. And you may end up having an awkward heart-to-heart conversation with some of these friends where you have to explain Bi 101 to them. That's something that we have to do when we come out to people. I had to explain a lot of Gay 101 to my family, my huge extended family, to a lot of my friends decades ago who'd never met a gay person before. If I could do it, then you can do it now. So the next time one of your wife's gay or lesbian friends says something stupid or ignorant, or straight friends, straight people also say stupid and ignorant things about bisexual people all the time. The next time this happens and you're sitting there, say, hey, guys, I've been in relationships with men and with women. I am bisexual and you don't know what you're talking about. You want to talk with me more about it? I'd be happy to talk with you more about it. Or, hey, you could go home and Google this shit and learn something. And you have a right to be angry at that moment. Go ahead. Let yourself be pissed off. And if it's awkward, if it's uncomfortable, good. They've been making you feel awkward and uncomfortable for years. Time to turn the tables. Before we get to your response calls, let's do the tweets. Scott Heisel tweets, I love Dan Savage, but I have to take him to task for his sketchy math on the opening of this week's Savage Lovecast. 3.3% is not triple 1.8%. It's literally not even double. Scott is referring to a stat I cited a few weeks ago showing, according to the General Social Survey, that the numbers of Americans who identify as bisexual have tripled in the last 10 years. I said it went from 1.8 to 3.3%. That is, as Scott points out, not tripling. Here's where I screwed up. It wasn't my math. It was my transcription. It went from 1.1% to 3.3%. If I were better at math, I would have caught that as it came out of my mouth, but I am not good at math. So thank you to Scott and everybody else out there who caught it for me. Blue Monker tweets, it took me a couple of years, but I am all caught up on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast. It is my most listened to podcast at 20 days. Thank you, fake Dan Savage, for all the advice, laughter, and heartache. Can't wait for another 600 plus shows. You're welcome, Blue Monker. Hope you enjoy the next 600 as much as you enjoyed the last 600. And finally, Matcha tweets, Dan, the reason why many men think they can convert lesbians isn't because some lesbian-identified women occasionally like to get with men. It's because men don't respect women. This is turning some lesbians against each other, but men are to blame. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Men are to blame. That is an evergreen tweet. Thank you very much, Matcha, for your comment. If you want us to read one of your tweets on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now, response calls.
Hey, Dan and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I just listened to the caller who called in about his older friend sharing fries. I am that friend. And you're absolutely right with your advice, Dan. You hit the nail on the head. I am that friend because I'm poor as fuck. When I go out to eat with my friends, I don't have enough money to A, share my food, or B, buy the next round of drinks at a bar. So yeah, dude, like, back the fuck off. It's none of your business. If it's really a concern, then you can bring it up to her in private in the nicest way possible. But I would just suggest backing the fuck off.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 36-year-old woman in Seattle, and I am calling about the woman with incurable cancer who was on your last show, 655. I am also a woman with incurable cancer, and I think she had a good question. You had a good answer. But I really don't like it when people do the, I hope you overcome nature or things flip upside down for you. It's really hard to hear that over and over, especially when we are doing pretty well and, you know, recognize that our mortality is approaching, but we're still enjoying life. So if you could just acknowledge that it sucks, but hope she's doing well otherwise, that's a lot better than wishing that the impossible happens.
This is response to a caller that called about the girl that wanted to bring her bodyguard or friend on the date with them. Dude, I think you need to get over it. Like Dan said, like, you've been on 25 dates. You should be able to gauge if this is a common thing. And if it's the first time you've encountered it, then it's obviously not an issue and you're just thinking way too far into it. I have girlfriends that always tag along on their friend's first date, especially Tinder, because they want their friend's opinion on the person. And if you're having a good time when y'all get there, the friend can take a hint and get lost. It's really not that difficult. She obviously made the right decision not to go out with you because you're being a fucking dick about it.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. We are wrapping up the spring tour for My Dirty Little Film Festival Hump. And this week, for the final stops until fall, we will be in Montreal and Toronto. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get tickets. And I will be at the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco with the one and only Stormy Daniels on June 7th for Savage Love Live. Rachel Lark will also be joining us. Head to savagelovecast.com/events for details and tickets. And the Savage Love Live tour is coming to Minneapolis, Chicago, Madison, Boston in the fall. Again, you can get those tickets and find out the exact dates at savagelovecast.com/events. And we are going to do a one-minute wonder show. It's been so long that a lot of you may not even know what a one-minute wonder show is. That's where the questions have to be a minute or less, and my responses have to be 2 minutes or less. If you'd like to be a part of the one-minute wonder show, call us, 206-302-2064. The real question, of course, is whether I can ever answer a question in under 2 minutes, and we will find out on the one-minute wonder show. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Maddie Corman on Twitter at Maddie Corman. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.